Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to I'm a Writer But. My guest today is Julie Meyerson. Julie Meyerson is the author of 10 novels, including the best-selling Something Might Happen and The Stopped Heart, and 3 works of nonfiction, including Home, The Story of Everyone Who Ever Lived in Our House, and The Lost Child. As a critic and columnist, she has written for many newspapers, including The Guardian, The FT, Harper's Bazaar, and The New York Times, and she was a regular guest on BBC TV's Newsnight Review. She lives in London with her family. Welcome, Julie.
Hi, very pleased to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here. I loved your book. I was just telling you that it came to me at exactly the right moment, which is my favorite feeling when I'm reading.
Yeah, it's amazing when books do that. Yeah.
Yes, they find us right when we need them. And yes, there were so many passages that I was underlining. I have sort of a similar, so this book is a fictional take on something that you actually went through, which was having a child who was addicted to drugs.
Yeah.
And one of my siblings was and in high school, and
oh yes, so I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes, she's doing great now. She's doing wonderful.
Good. But, good.
You know, there was just so much here that I remember feeling that helpless dread and the rage and the sadness and the hope.
Yeah.
And shockingly, which I wasn't expecting, you know, I knew that aspect of your book, but I didn't know there would be so many rich passages about writing.
Oh,
and I this is such a wonderful book, such a gem.
Oh,
and
thank
something
you.
That I can't wait to return to again and again. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
Would you mind reading just a little bit? Give us a taste.
Yeah, sure. I'll read from the beginning. I think writers always do that because they don't really want to have to explain the plot.
Yes.
So I hope it makes sense. There's a night, I think this is the middle of June, when we lock you in the house. We don't want to do it, but, or so we tell each other, we seem to have no choice. In those days, we rarely go out. Any kind of social activity has begun to seem pointless. But for some reason I no longer remember, we don't want to miss this dinner. So we lock all the doors and leave you with a hammer so you can smash a window in case of fire. Your father doesn't think this is necessary, but I think it's necessary. I don't want you to die in a fire. Or I don't want to have to sit through a dinner party on the other side of town while all the time worrying that you might die in a fire. I know, of course I do, that it makes no sense to leave you locked in there whilst alarmed with the means of escape. I know it's entirely possible, given the state of mind you're in, that you might start a fire just so you can have a reason to smash the window. It wouldn't be the first time you've taken such a risk, damaging property or possessions simply in order to get your way. It is, let's face it, exactly the kind of reckless trick you're capable of pulling back then. But I have to admit, you don't do that. You make no attempt at all to get out. You microwave the dinner we leave for you, and you rinse the plate and put it in the dishwasher, and then after watching something on your laptop, you go up to bed. When we return, the house is silent. Nothing seems to be missing or damaged. No money has been taken. The hammer is exactly where we left it on the table in the hall. You do not appear to have made any attempt to break the glass. I am sure that one day, when things are better, your father and I will look back on this time with disbelief. I hope that we will. For now, though, we take each separate incident in our stride, behaving, to each other anyway, as if this life of ours is normal, as if it's exactly the kind of life that everyone lives. Time blurs when you're dealing with chaos. Everything blurs. We too sometimes are a blur. Each morning we wake to a brand new day and we just get on with it, transforming ourselves into whatever shape or form is necessary in order to deal with whatever chaos or disaster comes next. So many things which pass for normal in our house. The windows broken, cups and plates smashed, the doors kicked in, the visits to A&E, the police being called. The times when one of us will, almost without a second thought, rush to hide the block of kitchen knives in the cupboard under the stairs. Or take the house keys from their hook by the door and fling them under a cushion on the sofa. The fact that I always hide my bag the moment I come home, and your father would never dream of leaving his jacket or trousers lying around with money in them. The anger and the anguish and the shouting, the things I no longer dare do or say, the dreams and plans I've ceased to find it in me to care about, the pleasures we've forgotten to take. The moments when we have no idea what's coming next, what violence or drama or deceit, when we can't imagine what new bad thing might lie around the corner. The jagged, upset evenings when I admit we find it very hard indeed to calm down. The days when my first thought on waking is, I don't know if I can go on like this. The nights when we talk and shout and weep and then, as if nothing at all has happened, we sit and eat dinner in front of the news before putting ourselves to bed, where we sleep like babies, simply because there's no energy left in our hearts to keep us awake. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's all there in what you read. It's all right there. One of the things that really entranced me as I was reading was how the book jumps around in time.
Yeah.
And it really felt like the way that you as a human would be processing those kinds of events, those kinds of moments, you know, sort of recategorizing them, recataloging them, revisiting them, looking for clues.
Yeah.
And there's no real, I really appreciated that there was no real, and now we're going to talk about this thing that, you know, there was just, it was
yeah.
just natural the way that the book jumps around, the way that the mind would jump around.
I think it's true that I think I even say actually at one point that, in fact, I know I do say it, I just don't know where, that you sort of, you know, you lose all sense of time. And when talking to each other about everything that's happened, you really can't remember, hold on, was that before that happened or after? It really, and so you don't actually think of this sort of thing in a linear way, particularly. And I did want to get that over.
Yes,
Yeah, so thank you
absolutely.
for saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you could have approached this as, okay, I'm going to tell the story of this child who becomes addicted and what happens to her family, what happens to her parents. But instead you approached it in this other sort of revolutionary way where it's, no, I'm actually going to just be in the middle of it.
Yeah,
Was
I think
that
I
a
want to
conscious
write. I want to.
choice?
Yes, I think it's funny. Now you say it, I think I realise it was. I can't honestly say I've thought of it like that before, but I think it's true. I think what I was wanting, only because this is the only way I could write the book, was to write about what this experience does to your head. I mean, to the head of the family, to the heads of the people who care about someone who's using drugs. And it does a very strange thing to your head. I mean, it sends you kind of mad in a weird way. However much you love that person and however much advice you take, and however much you try to do the right thing, the actual experience is completely bizarre. And what? And I also was thinking, actually, when you introduced the book, it came into my head. It is true. I did worry when I wrote this book, because I think, well, it was when you said about your own experience, the world is divided into people who've been through this and know what you're talking about, and they will instantly understand what I'm writing. And then perhaps people who haven't been through it, you know, can they even relate to this? Because I think it's very hard. And therefore, when you can't relate to something, it's boring. So I worried I would bore at least half the world. But and it's nice that actually not everyone who's responded positively to it has had the experience, thank goodness. But I did worry about that. I do think it takes you to another place. And it's very nice when you meet people who have been through it and you realize they're as normal and interesting as you think you yourself are, and loving, and they're not weirdos, you know. Because I think that's the other thing. I mean, when you're in the middle of the experience, I did try to convey this, you know, you actually you don't think you're a good person when you're the parent of someone going through this.
Right. Yeah, I think what you do so masterfully here is you have to hold in your head at the same time when you're going through this, you have to hold in your head that this is someone that I love dearly. This is someone I love dearly. And they are an absolute monster right now.
And it is so cruel, I think, what, again, this is in the book, but, you know, that the only way you can help your child going through this is to turn away, is to push them away. It's that is the worst. For me, that's the very worst thing, because actually families have all sorts of things happen to the people they love and to their children. Terrible things, worse things than this. But they can usually be there for them. sit with them in hospital, talk to the consultants that, hope for them, I suppose.
Yes, help them in some way because
Yes. And you
they want
can't,
the
with this, you
help.
can't.
You
Yeah.
can't.
And it's especially cruel. Yeah.
It is. I found that so such a great choice that you made, that it was, it really is a derangement that happens, like it
Yes,
they
it is a derangement. I agree.
soon after that passage that you read, they drop their daughter off at a center where she's going to be for 3 months, and they're able
Yes.
to enjoy sunlight,
Yes, just be normal. Exactly.
yes, like maybe
You're,
I'll eat outside
yes, I know exactly. Go to the hairdresser's, see a movie. Yeah. Things that, because that's, I mean, that's the other thing you, I don't want it to be, I hope the book isn't just about this, but I do think you, as parents of a child going through that, you just lose all sense of what makes you happy, of what pleasure is. And again, I was trying to convey that. It's a very
Right, well,
hard, it's a very strange world. Yeah.
you don't think you deserve it on some level.
Yes, I think that's true. Yes, I think you don't.
And even as you're
Yeah.
locking her into the home,
Yeah.
there's all these other horrible things that could
Yes.
happen, and then just the relief that nothing happened, right? It's just
Yes, exactly.
you just hit on it so
Yes.
masterfully.
Yes. Yes. Because actually you expect your child to behave monstrously by this stage, and of course they don't always. I became very, and I ought to say, I mean, this is entirely a work of fiction in the sense that the daughter is an entirely made up person. I do have a daughter, but she's nothing like that. But I could see this girl. I knew this girl and I liked her. I began to care for her as I was writing the book, actually. And I knew that she was a good girl, really. I just knew that she was, even though she wasn't any of my children. And of course, it is entirely fiction, but I sort of, this is what I say, and I think this is true. It's a fiction I couldn't possibly have written if I hadn't had this experience. But I haven't literally written of my experience, and a lot of it is very made up. Other bits aren't, but
Can you
yeah.
remember the first time that you glimpsed her, that you had an image of her?
That's an interesting question. When did I glimpse her? I can't really, but I know I glimpsed her very vividly. And I should say also, I didn't sit down and sort of say, right, I want to write a book about a child using drugs. How am I going to do it? What will the character be? I just don't do things like that. So I wrote it actually. I knew that I could make this book when I'd been writing a lot, actually, a book that partly is this book and partly had other things in it that weren't working. And then I wrote that opening scene about locking someone in the house. And I just knew then. And I suppose I probably was able to see her when I was writing that. Although it took me a while to address her in the second person, but I knew it was this girl. But no, I can't really, but it is true. She's one of the most vivid characters to me that I've ever written, which is strange given that she couldn't be less like my own daughter, actually. Weirdly, I know what it's like to be the mum of a girl, but this is not my daughter in any way at all. So it's funny. I don't know who she is. I don't know if she's based on someone I've ever met or known. I don't think so.
She just
I can just see
existed.
her
She
right
was just
now.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you remember the impetus for, because you wrote a memoir called The Lost Child, which was
Yes.
about your
Infamously,
child.
yes. Yes.
Infamously, yes. And that's part
Yes.
of the reason that I
Yeah.
so connected with you, because we also did the tough love thing with my sister,
Oh, yeah.
and it's a terrible, hard, wrenching, horrible thing.
Yeah.
But it's like you say,
Yes.
there was nothing else to do.
Yeah.
There was nothing
Yeah.
else to do. And
No.
so you did, talk about what actually happened in your life.
Yeah.
Can you remember when you thought, there's still more that I have to say, and I need to say it in fiction? Do you remember?
No, and I actually no, I didn't. I can see why you would ask me that. It's an entirely reasonable question, but I never did think that. In fact, quite the opposite. I mean, The Lost Child is actually about something else. It's about a girl called Mary Yellerly, a Victorian girl, and she actually takes up a good two-thirds of the book. But we were having a very difficult experience with our son while I was writing it, and I found him slipping in because the book was about mothers and how little they can do to protect their children. This real-life girl, Mary, and her brothers and sisters almost all died of TB in 1839 or something. I can't remember the exact date. And I just couldn't, well, as a writer, I was engaging very much with this story of this girl, and at the same time, we felt we were losing our son. And I found myself writing about it, but just in between the Mary Yellerly bits. I mean, just little, almost fragmentary diary bits, almost. And I did actually say to my husband, sorry, this is just the preamble to explaining the next book. I said to my husband, "I don't know what to do. I'm writing this Mary Yellerly book, but I keep writing about our son." And he, being a writer and a supportive husband, I think, although he's probably wrong, actually, he said to me, "Just write the book you need to write, and then we'll panic." And which, of course, is the best thing a writer can say to you, but actually, so with hindsight, so anyway, this book had the most, it's very difficult because it's too long a story really to tell, but it had the most awful reaction over here. But, and this is so, I have to emphasize this, people reacted to and wrote about the book before it was available to read. So the book they wrote about was an idea, what they thought I might have written. They hadn't, it wasn't available, it wasn't even in proof. And you can imagine, as a writer, you'll understand this. I think all writers are prepared to be attacked for what they've written. I often am attacked. I mean, I'm not often attacked, but I'm always ready for it. And I understand that, but not for something they haven't written, that people haven't read. And that was, it took me a long time to get over that. So the reason I'm saying that is I had no intention of ever writing about anything to do with drugs ever again. And I was rather surprised. It took me a long time to get over what happened with The Lost Child. I wrote some other novels. I did get find my writing confidence again. It took me a long time to find my person confidence. I kind of fell apart really in some ways. But a lot of years have passed, and I think I just found myself. I was startled to find myself letting again this story of drugs creep into this book and finding, I suppose I assured myself that it was all right because it was fictional, it was a different person. But I still knew as I wrote it that I was really asking for trouble by publishing another book that would, I suppose. Again, as a writer, you'll understand this. Publishing a book that would allow reviewers to talk about The Lost Child in their reviews. I think that was the problem. And of course, I knew that. And I think I just thought, bring it on, come and get me. I'm ready. I think that's what I thought. And I also, it took me ages to make this book work. By the time I'd finished writing it, I knew it was the book I wanted to write. So I was kind of ready for whatever came. And actually, it hasn't been too bad. I mean, obviously, I had all. It is difficult. Another reason I don't like having to talk about the lost child right now is it's very important to me for our son really, that I don't go around talking about that book because it was very difficult for him and I felt very responsible for what I'd done to him with it. But he was very sweet when I was writing. Well, actually, I think when I'd finished nonfiction, I told him all about it and said I'm really nervous because it's people are going to write about the lost child and I can't remember what he said but it was something along the lines of oh it's fine mum just ignore them and he sort of gave me a little pep talk really which I thought was so sweet because he had every right not to he's actually I should say he is the most he's all right now he's only as all right as someone who's used drugs can be because I think it stops your life in various ways but he is the loveliest most he always was the most engaged amiable kind of patient person. It's hard to describe what he's like. His real self, the not on drugs self. So anyway, he was very, but I to be honest, I think he was more generous to me about the fact I'd written nonfiction that he than he could have been, I suppose. And I appreciate that. And it moved me. And that's why I have it when people ask me about The Lost Child, of course they do, but I sort of feel I must say as little about as possible about him because it's just not fair. My poor
Course.
kids, they've all been talked about enough. I do know that.
Do any of them write?
Yes, two out of, actually not our eldest, but the other two. I mean, he's a musician, but the other two are both writing. Our son, our youngest, is writing a novel at the moment. He's written a couple of novels, not published, but I think he has real talent. He writes very like me, actually, or in the same way. And our daughter is a TV writer, and actually, she's on the. I won't say too much because again, she would kill me. But she's on the cusp of real success. She's already had some kind of exciting success, and is about to sell various things to various people. I mean, she will soon eclipse me, and I'll be glad to be called the mother of her. I think that's how
Oh,
it's going to
wow.
go. But
That's
Siri, it's quite
amazing.
exciting what's happening to her. Yeah.
They're
So
all artists.
they're all artists. God, yes. I wish they weren't. Yes. Yes, they
And
are.
they came from a home where their parents were writers. That's so
Yes,
interesting.
I have to say we never ever encouraged them. In fact, if anything, we said, don't be writers. We really didn't encourage them, but it's amazing how it seeps in.
It's just there.
Yeah,
Yes, it's
it
there.
is. It is.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about the influence of parents because one of the characters in the book that I love to talk to you about is the mother.
Oh, yeah.
And the parallels that I saw with the man who becomes her, I guess I can't really say lover,
Yeah.
kind of lover.
Kind of love it. Yes, kind of.
He th they both the narrator is so that her mother is very a very strong character. She has a very sad past. And she sort of pronounces what reality is for her daughter.
Yes. Yes.
And her daughter rarely fights back. And when she does,
Yes.
very much upsets the mother. And
Yeah.
the lover does kind of the same thing. And when the mother dies, the lover comes into
Yeah.
the picture. And I wanted to hear from you kind of what that meant for the narrator
Yeah,
to sort
that's
of.
true. Yes, that's true. Actually, nobody else has said that, and it's absolutely true. And I think I am sort of consciously, but definitely subconsciously aware of that. But it's very true. I think they're both narcissists, I would say. And I think that is referenced, certainly for the lover at one point. And they're both kind of bullies, probably the
Yes.
mother more obviously than the man. But I should say, I mean, the mother, it's funny, the mother is, and I can say this because she sadly died while I was writing the book, but she's the only character I didn't make up. She's entirely, I mean, obviously, when you write a novel and you write about somebody, of course it's made up because it's my subjective
Right. Your
viewpoint. But
perception, right.
yes, but I didn't, almost word for word, some of the conversations are in there. I didn't, once she died, I knew I didn't have to sort of worry anymore. I don't know what I was going to do. It's very difficult. I was estranged from her, and I think I had to write this book, but I think it would have been very difficult if I published it while she was alive. And I think, I don't know, I hadn't faced that battle actually. I hadn't really thought about it enough.
Did it feel good? Did it feel freeing when you realized I can actually say these things? I can
Not
say them.
really. No, it does now. It felt very devastating. Her death was very devastating to me. It was exactly as in the book. She was estranged from me. She asked them not to call me when they knew she was
Oh.
dying. She died fairly quickly and suddenly. It wasn't particularly expected. It was an illness that took her quite quickly. I still don't know all the details because nobody will tell me. I was banned from attending her funeral and told that I would be there'd be someone to stop me if I tried to go there. And that was all to do with that was her. It's very sad. She didn't really intend that, but it was her last bit of power. And she always used to, she's one of these people who used to always talk about when I'm at my funeral, you'll be sorry and all this stuff.
Oh no.
Both my parents have cut me out of their will at different
Oh.
times and for different reasons, which I think is quite hilarious for such a mild-mannered girl that I am. I'm a good girl and I've been cut out of both. But actually, I'm probably saying too much here. But I had toxic parents, and I wrote, my father actually is also in the book, and it's only a sketch really, but yeah, no, you were saying didn't feel good. No, it didn't really. I think it's a relief that it wasn't a problem what I've written. She
Yeah.
would have loathed this book, even though actually I tried to make peace with her in the book. I hope some people have said it's quite a sympathetic portrait in some ways, and I hope it is because I felt so sorry for the little girl she was, and
Yes.
she had a terrible childhood, and I think she was a bully, but she was, fear is what propelled her into being a bully.
Did she was
And
she really dropped off at boarding school at age 5?
She was sent on an aeroplane to boarding school on the Isle of Man when she was 5 years old.
That's
And the
terrible.
strange thing, one day, I wish I could get to the bottom of this. I still don't know, partly because I think when we asked her, she would never really tell us. But and now, of course, she's gone, and I can't really push her on. I'd like to. I want to know why they did that. What was
Yeah.
happening at home, or what was so wrong, or why did that happen? It's extraordinary to do that to a 5-year-old in 1944. I don't
Right,
know.
right.
There may be a story there, but either way, we all know what that would do to you to be sent away at five. And I think she would have always described herself as a survivor, but very much sort of at the expense of everything around her in some ways, I think. And no, it didn't feel good when she died. I still, again, this did go into the book, but I think I'm still making peace with her death. It makes me very sad when I think about, I wrote about her grave in the book and how I think of her, and that's all entirely true. Everything in the book about my mother is how I really feel about her. And I think if she had been able to read it, I would love to think she could have recognized that it was written with love, but I don't think she would have.
I
She hated my writing. She
absolutely.
hated my writing. She hated my writing career. She hated everything about it. So.
Do you? I want to ask you about that, but I do think you give us all of her. So she had a very, very sad childhood. There's a little, little bits and pieces of her time at the boarding school and the way that her parents were, and you give us that, and you give us even in the present, day memories of her. As she's dressing her daughter down, or even there's kindnesses. There's just kind of describing her and trying to understand why she would say these things, or and the husband is much more cut and dry about the mother than the narrator is. The
Yeah, he
narrator
sees her
is,
clearly. He sees her in black and white. Yes, I think
yes,
that's
and it's not
true.
his mother. And the fact of the matter is that it's your mother, and you're
It's my
always
mother.
going to yearn for that character. It made me think of My Name Is Lucy Barton. Have you read that by Elizabeth
Yes, I
Stroud?
love that book. Yes, I love that
And
book.
it's the same. It's she's has
Yes.
this just yearning for her mother, and her mother
Yes,
is
she does.
terrible, but
Yes, it's
also very
true.
flawed and very sad and
Yeah.
heartbreaking.
Yes. Now, I always say I love that book. I'm the only person who's ever thought this, and I'm presumably wrong. But I think there's a very good argument in that book for the fact that her mother wasn't really there, didn't really come to the hospital. Wasn't there are various moments, but I think I'm the only person who thinks this, and presumably Elizabeth Strout doesn't think this, when the nurses come in and out and they don't really see her or pay attention to her. And I'm the only person who's read it like this, but I find it even more moving to read it that way, actually.
And she never sleeps.
That's right. She never sleeps. Yes, there's various. It's a while since I read it, but I could put together a detective case for why she wasn't there. But I've never heard Elizabeth Strout say that. It's funny
There's a
that
moment.
you immediately understand what I'm talking
Of
about.
course. Well, because there's a moment where
Yes.
she asks her husband, because I think the mother calls at some point, and she says, "Well, did
Yes.
she ask about me? Did she say anything about me?" And the husband is like, "Oh, honey, no, she didn't."
That's right. I'd forgotten. Now,
And
it's a long time ago that I read it, but yes. Well, I
Well,
think it's very, anyway, just that's a little side thing, but I think it's a fantastic book, that book. It's
kind of blowing my mind
fantastic,
there.
and it's fantastic for everything that isn't said as much as for the things that are said, which is true of all great novels, actually, isn't it? But it's a, God, she's a brilliant writer. It's the
I
kind of book,
think.
that book is the kind of book I almost can't read when I'm writing because it's too good and I don't know how to write like that. You know
Oh, it's
that there are some writers you
infuriating.
can read. Yeah, there's some writers you just can't read when you're writing, and she's one of those for me.
And you
But
know another
yeah.
thing about her, not to make this about Elizabeth Strout,
Yes.
but she's very dark. She writes very dark, and no one ever says
Very dark.
that.
No, it's true. They sort of she's got an almost slightly homey reputation.
Yes,
Not
and
quite Anne
she's
Tyler, but a little bit going that way. I agree. She's
absolutely.
very dark. The stuff about poverty and stuff is not, is not told in a way to make you feel at all comfortable or able to deal with it,
No,
is
no,
it? I
no.
know. It's funny we feel the same.
Oh, well, we'll have to have this Elizabeth
Well,
Strout episode at some
can you
point.
interview her? Could you please interview her and ask her about
I
that?
will.
Because I
I
need to
absolutely
know.
will. I'll hit her up.
Yeah.
But one of the things I kept thinking was,
Yeah.
okay, we're seeing this mother and the narrator's relationship with her mother and her yearning to understand, or her yearning to just sort of be at peace with her mother. And of course,
Yes.
I'm always thinking, well, the narrator is also struggling with that with her daughter, and she's the mother in this situation, and her
Yeah.
and she's wondering how her daughter sees her, and
Yeah.
she doesn't want to do the things that her mom did.
Yes.
And so I felt like that was such a poignant, you never come out and say it, you never come out and make that comparison for us, but of course it's always there,
Yeah,
the
it's funny.
mother and the daughter and the
Well, it's true, but because lots of people after this book was written and once it was sort of out there, or people were reading it, perhaps before it was published, actually, everybody was saying, oh, of course, this is a book about mothers and daughters. And the weird thing is, when I was writing it, I didn't see it that way. I mean, of course it is. I don't know why that is, but I just didn't. I didn't set out to write a book about mothers and daughters. Obviously, it was hard to write a truthful protagonist, narrator, if she didn't have a relationship of some kind with her parent. And obviously I was going to write about my mother, but yeah, I didn't really see it that way. I saw it as a book about families and abuse and writing,
I
but
think, like when I think of a book about an addicted child and parenthood, I think of Loved and Missed by Susie Boyd more than I think of nonfiction. I
oh
think
yes, no, I love
nonfiction.
that. I read that quite recently. I thought it was very well done. I've now
Yes.
forgotten it, but I did think it was, I really admired that book.
Yes,
That
but
told it
I
very
think you're
well.
absolutely right that nonfiction is kind of more about perception, and it's more about like
Yes.
understanding yourself in relation to everyone in your life
Yes, I
and
think, yes, I mean, it is about that thing that I think they said on the cover, but about, can a writer, actually, I think I wrote that actually when they were asking what should be on the cover. I think I wrote this, but it's about can you trust a writer with the truth of their own story? And I think that's partly me saying, that is partly me post The Lost Child saying, no, I can't be trusted. I'm dangerous. I'm a bad person and a bad writer, and this is all in the book, really. The fact that, I was for The Lost Child, actually it's me now bringing it back to The Lost Child, isn't it? But, I was attacked not just as a writer, but as a parent. And it's so
Yes.
hard to be told. I was told I was a bad mother. And the really bad thing was that at a certain point, I started to believe that.
Oh.
And I did. I believed it. I decided they were right. I now don't think they were right, but I did at the time. And I really did fall apart, actually. I couldn't drive the car or anything.
Oh my God.
But it took me a while to sort of get back from that. But What am I saying? Yes, so I've lost my thread now of what we were talking about. But
Perception.
yes, perception is, for me, this is much more. Sorry, if I didn't want to think this was just a book about addiction and drug abuse, because I would find that quite a boring idea, I think. Because as I said to you before, I actually, unless you've experienced drug addiction, I think it is a dull story because they're all the same. Every story is the same in the most relentlessly boring way, in a way. And I think I would never have set out to write a book about just that because I don't think it would captivate enough people. So it has to be universal, doesn't it? You have to write something that everybody's going to respond to. And even the stuff about writing, actually, I hugely hesitated to include because I've always said I'll never write about a writer. I always put people with proper jobs in my books because that's interesting. And I think writers, there are some books out there about writers which I think could do with less about the writing. So I felt that was a bit of a risk, actually. But then once I started writing it, I loved writing it. So everything I feel and know about writing is in this book, for better or for worse.
Oh, it's so good. There are so many juicy bits about writing and about like what makes it meaningful and I took pictures of like three whole pages and pasted them into my chat with my students, and I
Oh,
said,
so it'd be so nice,
I want to hear what you
really.
have to th say about this. It was with her,
Oh,
the meeting
really?
with her
Yes.
client,
Yes.
where she has so many amazing rants, I would say, about writing, and they're so
Yes.
beautiful. And so I want to hear from you because I think having become a parent, having been a parent for 11 years now, I was struck by how time changed for me, like I felt like I was living all the times of my life all at once. I could see myself as a child, I could see myself as a parent, I could see myself in the future looking back on this
Yeah,
time.
it does do that, doesn't it? That's
It
true.
does,
Yeah.
and I feel like there's parallels there with writing,
Oh, that's interesting.
I wanted to hear from you if you agree with that, if you think that this attempt that we're making to make. As writers, has anything to do with this other attempt that we're making to, do the best we can with our children? I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Were you a writer before you were a parent or
Yes,
not?
yes.
You see, it's difficult for me to say because I wasn't. Before I had babies, I had a proper job in an office, and I wanted to be a writer since I was a child. But I started. I had it. Then I had Jake, our eldest. Then I had my daughter 2 years later, and I think it was only because someone made me semi-redundant from the office. It was very bad, actually. I'd sort of lost half of my job. That I thought, right, I'm going to sit down and write that novel. Actually, my husband, who's very bossy and is also a writer, said, "Stop talking about it, just do it." And I was on maternity leave. And this is totally coincidence, but my father killed himself the night our daughter was born,
Oh
only
my
because
God.
it, no, it sounds more meaningful than it is. It was New Year's Eve, and he killed himself on New Year's Eve, as people do. And she happened to be due on New Year's Day, and she was born in the early hours of New Year's Day. He didn't know that. It always sounds so dramatic when I tell that story, and I almost feel I haven't earned the drama that. People, when people hear it. But all that had happened to me. I had two children, and I sat down and started a novel, which was my novel Sleepwalking. And by the time it was published, I'd had another baby. So it took me about 18 months or maybe 2 years to write, because I broke off to give birth and then carried on. So by the time my first novel was published, I had three children under three and a half, I think it was.
Oh my
That was all
God.
my babies. I had them all by the time I was 31. So yes, and then my book was published when I was 34. So I, in a funny way, I associate almost sort of in my body the idea of writing novels with the idea of having children.
Yeah.
I don't think I actually think before I had, perhaps this is answering your question actually, because I don't think before I experienced becoming a mother, I was mature enough or had enough to say in a weird way. I wanted to. I used to write little scraps of things that could have been novels, but they were terrible. But once I became a parent and gone through all that, and maybe losing my father was a part of it. I felt a new kind of authority settled on me. And I sort of sat down at the screen and was able to say things on the page that felt exciting and a little bit uncompromising, which excited me. And that's how I wrote my first novel. And I just kept going. And I was amazed. When I finished my first novel, I felt it can't possibly be published because things like that don't happen to people like me. And at the same time, I thought it can't possibly not be published because I know it's brilliant. That feeling, that amazing feeling that writers have, because it is, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Right. You need insane confidence to finish a novel, I think.
And
Insane
then
self-belief. At the
the
same time, you
range,
don't believe in yourself
humility.
at all. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and
Yes.
both were true. And both are true every time I write a novel now, actually. But I think, so to answer your question, I think for me, it's very hard for me to disentangle motherhood and writing. And, it, you know, we had all the, I'd have to say, my husband did so much childcare while I finished that novel because I was working 3 days a week in an office. You can imagine the Sundays that he took the children off to the park and stuff. He was
Yes.
wonderful. And then we, you know, we, I won a prize with an extract from it before it was published. I think I won £10,000, which we used to pay for a bit more nursery for me. So they went to nursery a couple of hours a day so I could carry on writing. So it was all like that, you know, every
Yes.
writer who's a parent of young children knows that stuff. But it's amazing how, isn't it? How, I think this is true of all mothers of young children. You suddenly find you can concentrate because you have to. The day is
Yes.
a whole lot shorter. You have to think really hard about what do you actually want out of these hours, the hours that you don't have to be with them.
Yes.
And that was a big part of it for me, I think.
It
But
really
I'm
uber
so glad, you
focuses.
know, yeah. So I feel my children made me into a writer. And yeah, and it's kind of, it's almost ironic that I then got into so much trouble for writing about them because the other thing is that my children are everything to me. I mean, I know every mother would say that, but they are literally the only, by far, the most interesting thing that's ever happened to me. And I only write about the things I care really deeply and passionately about. So how can I possibly not write about them? It's been very, you know, it's very hard not to, is the problem. To write about motherhood, to write about children.
I so relate to that, and I think it can be so easy to make these pronouncements of that the internet and the wider world loves to make of how dare she or how dare he or
What
but
people
it's
should write
exactly
about, it's yes.
right. It's exactly like you're saying. It's something that I deeply care about and something that this is how I process things that I deeply care about.
Yes,
And
absolutely.
you're speaking to people who need this. You're speaking to people
Yes.
who've been there and who
Exactly. And we
need to
can't, and
hear.
if we can't write about the you know, life's most difficult problems and most upsetting problems, whether it's drugs or something else, if we can't write about them and share them as honestly as we can, then, you know, what is writing for in a way? That's not to say it's therapy. I don't believe it is therapy, but and it's not to say you can't write fiction, but it's about transmitting a feeling, isn't it? And
Yeah.
saying to people, this is how it felt for me. I wonder how it felt for you. For me, that's very important, actually.
Oh, that's
This is why
everything.
it's why Elizabeth Strout's novels are so bruising because they feel
Yes.
so true,
Yes.
and they're not making it easy. They, you know, they almost hurt to read, don't they? They're then, but I've have, but they have given me a lot of solace in a way because they're
Yes.
like that.
Yes, because it's a recognizable pain and excuse me, knowing that it's a
Absolutely.
is a great feeling and a terrible feeling all at once. I want to talk about another thing that, speaking of being moved by a novel, something that I will probably think about again and again and again till I die, is there's a theme of freedom in the novel and being
Oh,
free
right.
and what that means, and especially for a woman and a writer. And I'm speaking about there's this moment where she's talking to a writer friend of hers who hadn't been able to write for years and years.
Oh, yes, that's
And
right.
went through a very fallow period and had gone through a divorce. I believe it was a divorce, right? It wasn't
Yes,
a, and
that's right.
her children were
Yes.
getting older, and
Yeah.
she was just in this deep fog. And one day she woke up and realized she was beholden to no one, and her
Yeah.
life was no longer defined by these labels of mother,
Yeah.
wife. She
Yes.
could free herself from that without freeing herself from the bond, right? Like the bond
Yeah.
still existed, and the love
Yeah.
was still there, but she realized there was a freedom there, and because of that, she sat down and just wrote and wrote and wrote. And
Yeah.
I had never encountered that in anything. I had never considered that before. I'd never considered that kind of freedom.
Well, that's really interesting. It's funny because when you said freedom, I suddenly thought, where is that? But it's very funny. That scene, I was quite far on with the novel actually, and I was talking to a pretty famous writer who I won't name at a party, someone I don't really know very well, but we were at a party and we stepped outside exactly like that, so she could smoke. And she doesn't know she's in the book. And we had a conversation, which actually wasn't that conversation, because I've made most of that conversation up. But its tone clearly was that conversation. So when I found myself writing that scene, it's really funny, isn't it, how fiction works. I could see her, and I could see,
Yeah.
so everything that's visually described is her in this person's back garden about, when was it, 2, 3 years ago. But what she says is not her words, and I've made them up, and even the circumstances, they were slightly her circumstances, but not quite. And then as I wrote it, I knew what I was really writing about was my own state of mind and what I feel And what, in a way, I've experienced, although I haven't really experienced any of what she's talking about, but it became so true for me and so belonged in the book. And it's kind of actually that scene almost more than, and there are other scenes that I would say the same is true of, but that scene perhaps more than any other. When I think about it now, and if I were to reread it, I haven't read it for a long time, it's very hard for me to disentangle where it comes from, what it's about, why it belongs in the book, but it does. And one day I might dare say to her that there was a scene in my novel that was inspired by a conversation with you, which she probably doesn't even remember. But it's funny, isn't it? How, yeah, it's funny how these things work, how one writes, where you get your bits from is
Absolutely
interesting.
belongs in the novel because
It
it's
does, it
something that
does.
the narrator's thinking about all the time,
I
right? Like,
know. But
and
it was a random decision I made just at a certain point when I was quite far on with the novel. And I remember when I wrote that scene thinking, hold on, why am I writing this? Does it belong? You know, is this just padding? Will this work? But it needs to be there, definitely.
yes,
Yeah,
and
it's funny.
I love how the writing life asserts itself again and again in this book, because
Yeah.
we are, shackled to this really sad story about the child
Yeah.
and our hope for her and the mother's hope for her
Yeah.
and the effect it's having on the marriage
Yeah.
and
Yes.
as we've talked about, perception
Yeah.
as a whole.
Yeah.
But the
I
writing
think,
is
yeah.
there.
I think it's true because what I was saying to you about I've never written about writing before because I almost disapproved of people who wrote about writing. But obviously, some people write brilliantly about it. But I do think it's also written about badly sometimes. And who really cares what it feels like to be a writer? You know, do we really mind? But I think perhaps because I've been told off for being a writer more than most people, and I really have been told off. I think that's why I sort of felt right. I'm now allowed to write about writing. I'm going to do it, whatever they think. Because I also, it gave me great pleasure writing about the various festivals and readings that she does, because those are all entirely made up. They're not based on anything, although sometimes I can see the place. They're based on somewhere I have been. But I went out of my way. I wrote them knowing that people would try and work out who I'm talking about, which festival, which interviewer, which writer, and they're all made up. But I loved, there was a part of me, a mischievous part, that wanted to do that, that wanted people to be thinking I was writing something entirely real. And yet, you know, the feeling you get from that is entirely real. It's exactly what I think about doing those things, but it isn't actually literally true. So,
I think it rings so true all throughout. And I'm reminded of something that you said earlier about there was a moment where having children gave you an authority to be uncompromising on the page.
It's funny. Yeah, it's funny that. I don't think I even thought that till I said that to you, actually. But something about the way you've been talking to me made me realize that.
Well, I think it's such an important moment in any writer's life where you get to that point, and you get to that point in a million different ways.
You do.
For me, it was I frustrated myself trying to sound like Alison Munro to the point where I was like, I just have to
All
sound
done
like me. Yes, I
that.
have to just write the way I would write, which is
Yeah.
such a silly thought.
Yeah.
But what I've discovered is it's not something that stays with you. Sometimes things break and things change, and you have to
Yeah.
reestablish your authority and your
You do.
uncompromisingness.
I agree.
And
Yeah, so you do.
you had to do that in your life after being so
Yeah.
unfairly tortured.
Yeah.
And the writer is having to do that. The narrator is having to do that in this book.
Yes.
And she's searching. She's really searching, and we're
Yeah.
on that search with her.
I think actually it's funny. I'm sure, well, I don't know this, but I would suspect that the most interesting writers are constantly doing that. Sort of, you're having to not only refind your confidence,
Yes.
but even I hope even the most famous and successful ones feel this, but not only that, but also renegotiate your relationship with writing at all. Why are you doing this? And, you know, why does the world need another book from you? And these are quite important, serious questions.
Yes.
And I think if you're not doing that, I mean, there are probably plenty of writers who aren't doing that, but they probably aren't the writers I'm most interested in reading. That's, you know, self-doubt is one of the most interesting things a person can feel, isn't it, actually? We all feel it in all sorts of ways, but I think particularly with writing, it's odd. Being a writer is an odd thing. I think you don't naturally earn the right to say things that people are going to want to listen to or read.
Right.
I don't think. I don't think anyone does.
I think it's just tied back to going really, really deep into, your I was going to say intention, but even intention doesn't really matter, I think.
Yes.
But understanding that I'm doing this because I have a question, or I don't fully understand this thing, or I'm I'm looking for grace. I'm looking for understanding or connection. And, like going back to like these really human reasons why we started doing this in the first place, rather than I want the big book deal, which of course we all want. We all
Yes,
want that
exactly. We all want
desperately.
that. Absolutely. Yeah,
But
you're right. It's
it's
funny because when you say intention, I sometimes actually I feel slightly sort of embarrassed that when people often do ask me, what did you mean with this book? They've done, in the past too, and I often don't really have. I'm never sure what I have. I don't write. I think I have said this before, but I don't write ever because I've got something to say. I
Right.
write in order to find out what I want to say, and that finding
Yes.
out process takes the whole time of the book. And I do, sometimes I'm not even sure when I finished it, and then you read the reviews and they say, "Oh, as usual, her themes are this, this, and this." And I sort of think, "Oh, that's interesting, are they?" I hadn't realised that,
Thank
but
you for letting me know.
I definitely don't write because I have had an idea and want to put it down. But I do know this about myself, that I find the process of writing, the telling, the way of telling, the tone, the atmosphere, the thing you can do by putting one word in front of another. I find that so immensely exciting. That's what makes me write. But of course, if you're going to do the telling, you've got to have something to tell. So you've got to concentrate very hard and say, you've got to listen to yourself and say, what's happening here exactly? What is going on? And I do that. And I also edit myself furiously. I mean, I get rid of every other word all the time. But I think there are a lot of great writers who do have intent, who say, I want to explore this or something.
Right.
I can't imagine ever doing that.
I can't either, and I'm
Not
so
what I do.
intimidated by
Are
that. It's like
you?
that feels like a capital
Yeah.
A author out there
Yeah.
doing that kind of work at their typewriter, and
I agree. Maybe
over
men
here.
write like that. More men write like that than
I
women,
agree.
probably.
I didn't want to say it, but you're right.
Yeah, I know.
I often talk about how my favorite books are where it feels like the writer is up to something, and I don't need a satisfying. In fact, I prefer there not to be a
Yeah.
closed, satisfying ending. I want to leave the book and go, okay, well, I really need to think about all of that because I don't
Yeah, I
know.
agree. And
I
also,
loved
do you
the.
need to know whether they know what they're up to? Because I don't think I do.
No.
No, exactly.
No, I want to go on that journey. I want to
Yes.
make create the experience along with the writer.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree about that.
And that kind of reminds me of how you've ended this book. Which
Yeah.
spoiler for everyone, is the narrator sort of offering up a hypothetical where the child dies, and
Yeah.
but by the end of the hypothetical, it feels more real than just the writer saying, well, what if this was the ending?
Yeah.
And I don't
I
have the
think
answer,
it's.
and I like not having the answer, and it
Yeah.
deepens every question that the narrator has posed throughout the book.
Yeah. I think what I was trying to do with that, I wasn't particularly conscious of this at the time, but having thought about it a bit, I think, again, when I said, I was trying to write about how being the parent or the loved one of an addict kind of sends you mad, sends you into a completely different, it messes up your head completely. I think
Yes.
I wanted to write about the fact that, and I think I do feel this strongly actually about our child, that even though things seem to turn out more or less all right, perhaps, it never leaves your mind, the idea that they might not have. And indeed, actually with drugs, there is always the possibility of it continuing. I did write. I mean, I should say, I don't, he wouldn't mind me saying this because actually he said it in the press. But our eldest, although the lost child was about his skunk use, which was bad enough, he later, having been fine again, used heroin, and that's what this book is about. So I do know about heroin, and heroin is a whole different ball game.
Yes.
And heroin, actually, you're always a recovering addict. I mean, you are actually with skunk as well, but you really are with heroin. And I don't think he'd mind me mentioning that because he has mentioned it himself in the press. Otherwise, I would have kept it absolutely quiet. But
Right.
so I write about heroin with real authority, and I think I couldn't write a book where there is a possible, not exactly happy ending, but that things become resolved in a, in a happy way. And I couldn't do it without leaving that other possibility there because it's always there as a
Yes.
parent. There's a bit, there's a bit earlier on. I nearly read it as the reading bit, then I thought it was too dark. But when about the impact statement the parents have to write at the rehab place, and we had to write one, and you do write this down. And luckily, I can barely remember what this felt like, but I can remember. You are constantly, the two of you as parents, actually calmly discussing What will we do if he overdoses and dies? Or I'm going to say she because it's the daughter in this book. But
Yeah.
and how? What would happen? Would the police find us? Would they tell us in time? Would we be able to get there? Might they be on their own? You know, the idea of your child being alone and that happening. And I really did hear a story. There was a story on the radio of a girl who overdosed. It's a real life girl. And I heard this in the middle of the night on the radio, who wouldn't call her father because she felt she'd put him through too much, and went and crawled into the back seat of her car and
Yes,
died. And
yes.
that story, I heard that in the middle of the night when we were going through this with our son, and it was both unbearably bleak and absolutely the way I was thinking all the time. It's where my head was all the time. So not at all bleak, just every day. Absolutely, that was the reality we were living. And so I think there's a funny, it's hard to write to talk about this actually, because it's very, very, it is still quite there actually in my head in a way. But I had to, in order to write this book honestly, I had to depict my very worst possible fear and imagine the scene and imagine it really, really with as much courage and, well, courage is the wrong word, as much kind of Elizabeth Strout bravery as I possibly could. And so the ending of this book is really saying, you know, don't relax. Don't relax. It's still there. This is still, that was your worst nightmare, your worst fear. It's still your worst fear. It may even have happened. Who knows? I don't, I'm not sure I know what happens at the end of this book, because actually, I think all stories of addiction have open endings, actually, in a weird way. That's all I can say really about that. But it was very necessary. The book would not have been okay without that ending for me. That's the other thing when you're writing, isn't it? You write, I know when what I've written is what the book needs, and I knew that's what it needed for sure. And if some publisher had come along and said, oh, the ending's a bit bleak, because I've had these things said to me before, can we just lose that dark ending? I couldn't have done that. Couldn't have lost it.
And that's why I love it, because it's your authority and it's your uncompromising
Well, thank you. It's
writing.
probably too bleak for a lot of people, though, I would imagine. Not
No,
everyone wants a book.
I don't
Well.
know. I guess I just like books like that. I just like books that I'm
Yeah.
reminded I interviewed Yael Goldstein Love, who wrote a book called The Possibilities, in which she believes her son, she believes that she saw her newborn baby dead. But then
Right.
her baby didn't die. But using quantum physics, she realizes that there is a parallel universe in which the baby did die.
Oh,
And
I love. Oh,
it
okay, I
was,
love that.
yeah, so she was sort of trying to deal with her own
Yeah.
real life postpartum feelings of what if by actually
Oh, that's
facing.
exactly that. Oh, that's
Yes.
very much. Well, I think that is actually kind of what I'm doing here as well. I like that. Sorry, what's the author's name? I must look her up.
Yael
Goldstein.
Goldstein Love.
Okay.
Yes,
Okay.
it's called The
Look it up.
Possibilities. And she was very
Yes.
adamant about,
Oh, yes, I've heard of that. Yeah, I want to read it.
not sort of just brushing those feelings off as a parent, like
Yeah.
really, really giving those feelings attention and sort of
Yeah.
playing them out, because you have to be of two minds all the time, even
You do.
as a parent of a very young child that you're trying to
Yeah.
keep alive, as a parent of an older addict child,
Absolutely.
you have to be very pragmatic,
You
so
do.
almost removed, and you have to be very sensitive and
Yeah.
boundaryless in a way. And those are
Actually, it's
very
true. It,
hard.
that, oh, look, that's, no, because I agree. I mean, the possibilities, that's brilliant, because it's true that everything large that we do in life, whether it's falling in love or having children or, you know, everything like that has got all the possible outcomes, hasn't it? It has to. That's what our imaginations do when we're making large, passionate, powerful decisions. And
Yes.
they're always there, those possibilities. And I think it's also true that sometimes people say my novels are quite dark, and I know they are, but I do write about loss a lot in all my books. I don't know why, it's obviously to do with my childhood. I don't know what it is, but I'm always writing about loss. But, you know, you can't have loss without love. So I think my books are about love, because they're about, you know, you can't possibly, there's nothing to lose unless you really love. And so my books are about all, the best side of life, the very best of life, but how, you know, we're constantly in danger of losing it, I suppose. And that's a human condition for me, that we have to live with that.
Well, I think, there is no dark book without light, right? So it's kind of the
No,
same thing,
exactly.
right? Your books are
Yeah.
not dark, they're just
No.
the
But
other
also, you
side
know,
of dark.
the moment we become parents, we immediately stand to lose everything, don't we? I mean, we're
Yes.
immediately putting ourselves in a position of such risk. I mean, the most terrible risk. It's, yeah. Of
And you have to let your child become who they become.
course you do. You can't protect them from everything.
You can't.
Yes.
You
You
can't,
can't.
and maybe that's something to do with how the mother was de dealing with the narrator was, I'm going to force you into this box of what I
Yes.
believe is real, and you are just
Yes.
going to go along with it.
Yeah. I think it is
And
true. I think my mother and the mother in the book, but my mother, she loved me very much, but she didn't know how to be a parent without being in control all the time. And so she was a good parent of young children. She loved being a parent of young children, I think. But as I got older, she just nothing in her life had prepared her for realizing your children are not to you. They're actually a different person. And you have to let them go and, enjoy seeing them. It's something I'm going through at the moment, actually. I won't say with which of my children, but with several of my children, well, two out of three of them, I'm having to sort of say, that's not how I would handle it. But you're an adult. Of course, you've
Yes.
got to handle it. That all I can do is love you, be here, and help you when you want the help. But you have to let them, obviously you do, but it's hard as a parent doing that.
Oh, it's so hard. I find, even my young children, when they're asserting themselves, I find that I go absolutely still and I don't move and I don't speak.
I know that feeling
And they must
because
just be like, "What is wrong with you?" But I'm like, I'm just
you're
trying to let
right.
it happen.
The mummy antennae are out there, aren't they? Going,
Yes,
oh, I know,
exactly.
I know.
Well, Julie, this book is incredible. It's called
Thank you.
Nonfiction. Tin House is publishing it in the US.
Publishing it wonderfully, I should say. They are the most fantastic publisher. I'm
They
just
are
blown away
incredible.
by the passion they're putting into it, actually.
Anytime they contact me about featuring an author, I'm like, well, I know I'm going to love the book because Tin House only publishes absolute bangers.
Yes, they have very good taste, don't they? I think
They
so
really
too.
do,
Yes.
including in your book, Nonfiction. If you are a writer, if you are a parent, if you are a child of a parent, you will love this book. It's just chock
Oh.
full of brilliance and so much meaning. And I'm just so happy that you came on. I just thank you so
Oh,
much.
thank you. Thank you so much. A real pleasure. You made me think hard about some things actually that I hadn't thought about, so I appreciate it.